Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm your host, Clayton Morris. This is the podcast where we focus on passive income for the purposes of creating legacy wealth, cash flow. And the vehicle by which we do this is real estate. And I love to say we do not fall in love with real estate here on the show. We fall in love with ROI, return on investment. And today, I guess you could consider today's episode a bit of a follow-up episode. And I was really excited to do this. And our guest reached out and said, you know what, I've been with you now for a long time and have gone through a tenant turnover. I've got those health department violation letters in the mail. I bought a number of properties, and I think it'd be really helpful for your audience to kind of hear how things have been going over the past year to year and a half. My guest is Dan Barley. He was on episode 14 of the podcast, if you can believe that. And he is back today to talk real estate. How you doing, my friend?
Good, Clayton. How are you? Thank you for having me again.
I'm great. Now we were both just talking and hoping you've been suffering from the flu, all hopped up on antibiotics. So I hope you're doing better.
Yeah, I am. Thankfully, getting
good.
There.
Good. Yeah, and I've got a little touch of something now. I don't know. It's that East Coast. Everyone, I think New Jersey is like the hotbed right now for flu central. Yeah. I saw the other day. So
it's going around, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, great to have you back on the show. And, you know, hey, thanks for reaching out. I thought I totally agree with you. I think it'd be a great time to kind of just play follow up and see, you know, what it's like in the life of an investor who's growing his portfolio over the past year to 2 years and wanting to increase that over the next few years as you add new members to your family too, because you've got how many kids do you have now?
We have one right now, and we're going to, of course, try for another one soon, I hope. So and we'll see how that goes.
And what did you tell your wife?
I said, if you want to have more babies, I got to buy more houses.
There you go. Exactly, that passive income. So yeah, when we last spoke, we had, I think you just started, and I'm trying to remember when we spoke last, how many properties you had at the time. Do you remember?
I think, if I remember correctly, I think I had 4 or 5 units at the time. And I had just purchased my first with you, and then I was about to close on my first duplex with you guys. And it was new and exciting, and now it's almost a year and 2 months later. And it's been good. It's been very good. But obviously now I have more of the experiences that I've heard you talk about the podcast. I think you're up to what, 114 or something like that?
I think we're up well over 100 now. So.
Right.
And
right.
nearly 3 million downloads later, which is great. So, yeah. So some of the experiences, obviously, when you're in as I've mentioned here on the show, when you're in, a hot real estate investing market where local governments, you know, love to sort of take advantage of investors to the best of their ability, bureaucrats, so to speak, you know, they love to send out those health department letters. For high grass, you know, rubbish in the yard, et cetera, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I received them. And I think you actually did a podcast just devoted to this topic. And so the first time I got the letter, there was that initial panic of, oh my God, I have 2 days to get this done. How could this happen? But then I came down to my office, I scanned it over, I sent it to you guys and the rest of the team. And, you know, within a couple hours, they rolled me back and said, we're going to take care of this for you. Don't worry. And I was like, oh, wow, that wasn't bad.
Right.
And but it goes to say, like what you said on the podcast, I believe, is that initially you first have that like terror. But as I think you had a whole podcast called There's No Emergencies in Real Estate.
Right.
And so once you go through that, I think the initial fear and you go through it once and then you realize, oh, it's not an emergency and I have a good team to take care of this. And as long as you're prompt and getting it over to them, it's all taken care of. And I've gotten subsequent letters but never had that panic again that I did the first time I got it.
Right. We just got one last night. It was hilarious. We came back from going out to dinner with the children and we got a letter from one of our markets for high grass. And I love it now because it's entertaining because I rip the letters open and I see that they want to charge me, you know, $200 for high grass and it's January. So that just goes to show you that they're boilerplate letters half the time, you know, that they send these things out. So it's 5 degrees out, there's snow on the ground, and you're literally sending out a letter for high grass. Like these are the things that investors have to deal with. And I thought your perspective is great on it. And it's interesting too, because you're a lawyer. So if anything I've learned from lawyers over the years is that there are no emergencies. Right. Whenever I've like called a lawyer panicking about something, you know, years ago, who knows what it is, right? Entertainment contract dealing with whatever it is, you're calling a lawyer, you're panicking. As a lawyer, you guys have an amazing ability to just say, take a deep breath. There are no emergencies. So it's kind of funny that you almost had that initial little panic too, but yet you're a lawyer.
Right, right. It's the absolute truth. Everybody who comes to me also in my practice, whether it's whatever they need help or guidance on, they're always panicked and they always think, you know, the world's going to end tomorrow. And I have to assure them that, you know, it's not as emergent as they think. And then we just address it and it gets taken care of. And, you know, then later they're thankful and they say, oh, thank you so much. You put my mind at ease. I was able to sleep at night. So I said, okay, no problem.
Right. Right. And so when you have, and there are also ways in different markets where you are with your property management team. If you've got these health department or health inspectors that come out to properties, they drive around. And folks, if you haven't listened to that episode where I address this specifically, because a lot of people deal with this, you know, go back into the archives. Every episode is there. But to go back and listen to the episode specifically on health department and trying to understand, like, you know, they I think at the heart, right, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt that at the heart, they're trying to do well by the neighborhood, right? So this was episode 60 of the podcast. You should go back and listen, how to deal with the Board of Health. At the heart, I think that they're trying to do well and keep blight down on a neighborhood, right? So that hundreds of vacant houses don't sit there as rat holes and rat infestation and people right. sort of squatting in them, right? However, yep. like with anything in government, things expand. They add more and more, and then they fill quotas, and they drive around in the little hybrid vehicles that taxpayers pay for. And they actually, in a lot of ways, end up hurting investors, investors who might otherwise want to come in and buy up whole streets and rebuild whole streets are now getting erroneous letters for high grass. And unless you have a team that's able to go right down there and show them with pictures, there's snow on the ground, there is no high grass, can you please erase this from the computer system? Okay, sure, sir, we'll take care of that. Then it starts to add up, and $250 becomes $1,000, then $1,000 becomes $2,000, and then before you know it, your ROI doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
So people need to be aware of how to deal with that. Making sure you have a great team wherever you're located across the country is really important. Another component of this is tenants. Now, you've gone through we just had a tenant turnover on one of my properties, my wife and I. What was that process like? Did you build that into your thinking, or did you think, well, this person's probably going to be there for 30 years? How did you approach that? What was your mental taking?
I found out on my monthly statement that I got that the tenant had broke the lease and had vacated the property. And then I think I was dealing with Natalie, mm-hmm. not your wife, Natalie, the other Natalie. She said, you know, we're going to turn it over and we're going to get a new tenant in place. So I didn't get rent for, I think, 2 months on that unit, but now this month I got it again, which, you know, the tenant was placed and it was seamless for me. It was one of those things of, hey, I know my team is working on it and it's going to just take a little time. So you just factor that into your thinking process. You can't expect every single month, every single tenant's going to pay, especially if you're looking to build a big portfolio. So you just have that expectation that there's going to be some turnover. And you deal with it, but you know you have your team on the back end dealing with it, so you don't have to physically do anything or, you know, stress yourself or think it's an emergency, as we talked about earlier. And it was handled, and, you know, within whatever it was, 8 weeks or so, the tenant was out and a new tenant was in after the makeover was done. So it was very seamless on my end as an investor. It was really, really good.
Right. And so our team is focused on cash flow. Right. So it's going to be an immediate turnaround, immediate focus on getting, you know, that tenant in place, getting it, you know, painted, carpet touched up, cleaned up and turned over as quickly as possible so that that next tenant can move in. You know, so that's where we're focused is always going to be on the cash flow, how, you know, getting the right tenant. And also you want to make sure you get the right tenant. And so I think, I don't know if you went through that during the holiday season, but that's December. Yeah. You know, right after Thanksgiving into December ends up being the hardest time to place tenants. So, you know, if you're just starting in real estate investing and you're looking at different parts of the country, always remember that that's going to be the most difficult time because people don't want to move during the holidays, you know, and if they do have to move, chances are they've been evicted before, right? So you probably don't want to put a tenant in your property that has that on their record, or they legitimately are being transferred for work and they have to move, you know, and they're showing up in this particular town and they need a place to live. And so it's just, unfortunately, it's right by Christmas time. And so they need to move in. But typically that's going to be the slowest time of the year, at December. And so it's, if you can wait and you've got a house that's free and clear, you're not paying mortgages, if you can wait that extra month into January, that's when you're going to get a higher caliber tenant. You know, when you're going to wait that little bit longer time, just past the holidays, don't rush it if you don't need to. Just wait a little bit longer. And then very often you're going to get tenants that are going to want to use their tax return check, you know, from wherever. They're going to get 4 or 5 months of the ability to pay rent, and they just want to pay it all at once. They want to get that off the plate. They want to make a deposit. They want to get 4 or 5 months rent paid based on their tax return. So, you know, if you can get through that little holiday season, then just look back again in January.
Yeah, that's it.
Today's podcast is brought to you by VTech. Hey, are you a small business and you're looking for a phone solution? We run kind of a small business and I'm looking for a phone solution. How about a 4-line small business phone system? With the perfect solution for small business owners that need to install a phone system. It has all the qualities, features that had previously only really been available for companies with bigger budgets. That's where VTech comes in. The new system is the most affordable. It's easy to install. It's a 4-line phone system, and it's the best on the market. It basically has a main console. And what's really cool about it is that you can expand it to cordless desk sets, cordless accessory handsets, so you're not being tied to a cord. We're all cordless these days, right? You have speaker phones that they build in, and it will allow the system to grow alongside any business, up to 10 extensions, which is amazing. So you could start out with maybe you only have 3 employees in the office. What if you add a 4th or a 5th or a 6th? You can go up to 10 extensions. And expanding the system is a complete breeze. If you want to add an extra desk set, it's not a problem. Just with the touch of a button, a small business owner with minimal IT experience, you don't have to be a tech nerd to figure this out, can wirelessly register up to 9 expandable components. And because you're registered wireless, the expandable components can be located anywhere. There's a power source. That's great. Plug right in, works on the main hub. No need to plan your workstations around phone lines or Ethernet drops or Cat6 cable drops in your house or in your small office. No need to worry about that at all. So there's an auto attendant for each line. It has a digital answering machine with mailboxes for every extension, and you have full speaker phones. You have even music, hold music, you know, like elevator music. You've got the hold music, so you sound professional. And it also works if there's a power failure. So fantastic. Check them out. VTech. It's the 4-line small business phone system. And you can check them out at stores, at Office Depot, Office Max, Staples, as well as online if you visit vtechphones.com. Thanks for your support of the podcast. Yeah, I think you also said something that's really important too, which is putting your faith in the people that you work with, putting your faith in a team. Would you say that this type of real estate investing is good or bad if you're a high maintenance person? Like, if you like to have your hands on everything constantly, is this type of real estate investing good for you or bad for you?
That's a good question. I guess if you want to have your hands on every single thing, then it's probably not the best thing for you. Because you have to delegate and you have to trust your team. And if you're not, you know, if you don't have that philosophy of building that team, then it's probably not going to work as well. But what am I going to email you guys about every day? Is like, hey, did the tenant smile today?
Right.
You know, did it rain today? Like,
right.
I know that the rent's collected. I know that the tenant's paying, and I know every month I'm getting my cash flow. So they're really, for me, it's perfect because I'm very busy in my law practice. I don't have the time to micromanage, nor do I want to. The whole point of what we do and what what your podcast is about is building that passive income, and the whole key being passive. So you don't have to worry about it. So you don't have to get your hands in on every single detail. But I guess if someone wants to do that, this is probably not the greatest vehicle for them.
Yeah. And I think I would definitely underline that. Yeah. If you are a high maintenance person, if you really like to hand, you know, every day sort of have a daily check-in, you want to you like to get up on your whiteboard and check things off on a list every day and you really want to check in, then maybe you should be doing this yourself. You know, you should be going out on the weekends, finding properties, you know, renting them out yourself, driving by your properties every day just to say hi to your house and wave to it, you know, and check in on it. But if you want to be hands off, you know, like Dan, you know, you're in court, you're an attorney, you're working constantly. The last thing you want to do at the end of the day with a 2.5-year-old running around your house is be worrying about tenants hundreds of miles away.
Of course.
So what's next for you? What, when you look at your portfolio, you were talking to your wife about adding more to your family. Talk to me this year about sort of the structuring of your business and how you've grown that or how you've seen your wealth building. Obviously it's tax time, so I'm sure you've been looking at that as well. Take us through some of that.
Sure. So we have our freedom number, which, you know, if I remember, we talked about on the first podcast of 14 or whatever that I did. And we're getting there, you know, hopefully by the end of this year, we'll hit that number.
That's great.
So, you know, I've spoken to you and your team about purchasing a fourplex and we're in the works with that. I also took the initiative. So this will go back to trusting your team of thinking, hey, maybe I could do this myself. And I did buy a duplex that has not worked out as well because the contractor, you know, under budgeted and then wanted more money and then needed more time. And the management company wasn't responsive. So it was really great to see that the benefits of using you guys, of everything has always been right on point. Everything has been exactly at what you've told me and represented. And the timing has always worked out the way it was supposed to. Because I know I've purchased, I think, 3 with you guys that were rehabs. So the rehab was done in a timely fashion. It was exactly what you quoted me. And, you know, everything's been pretty smooth on that front.
That's great.
We're looking to buy this fourplex next with you and then hopefully add another 8 to 10 units this year between myself and my wife to hit our final freedom number and then grow it, you know, again from there as well.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I mean, we pride ourselves on, if we tell you a number that this is going to cost for our rehab, we say it's $12,000 for the rehab. If we go over that or we find a floor joist that needs fixing that we didn't see, we don't charge you for that. You know, that's on us. Right. To me, that's the cost of doing business. That's the cost of making sure that you're taken care of, you know? But that's eye-opening. So you found you were going to do this on your own. You found a duplex and then just timing with the contractor, it just didn't work out. They wanted to throw in additional things and add on extra costs.
Yeah, they did. They did. They, you know, all of a sudden he was like, oh, I didn't expect the roof to be this. This is another $2,500. And I was like, oh, but you know, like, what am I going to do? I'm over here in New Jersey. And you know, if it needs to get done, it needs to get done. And then the management company was slow and, you know, just dealing with all that and the timing, it took him an extra 9 weeks or so to complete the entire rehab. And obviously during that time, the property is sitting vacant. So obviously there's bills that have to be paid on it. But yeah, it was a real eye opener, eye opener, game changer, like to not go back and say, you know what, this is the real deal. This is exactly what I want to keep doing.
Well, what's also great about that is it's not a mistake. It's not a failure in any kind of way, but it just really helps, you know, educate you in a different way, in a different capacity about this process, you know? So if you had to do that again, you might, I don't know, with, you know, looking at the scope of work and sort of matching it up and nailing it down with this contractor. He knows you're out of state, so maybe he wants to take advantage of you a little bit, maybe pay him a little bit more money. You know, you're not there. And so, you know, it's like going into a car, you know, could go get your car fixed. Well, I don't know. This oil filter looks like it needs to be cleaned. Really? Yeah. What do I know? You know what?
Right. And the brakes and the tire and all of a sudden it adds up and can be quite expensive.
Right. Talk about your, when you're looking at your taxes now, because you've added these additional properties this year, you and your wife probably tackling taxes right now, I would think, where is that coming out in the wash for you?
It's good. It's been offsetting some of the other income that comes in from the law practice and the rentals. You know, obviously we have the rehabs and everything. So there's the depreciation component. It's good. I mean, it's going to save us money on taxes. That's for sure. So it's just that's just an added bonus. And I know you guys talk about that quite a bit. And it helps us with, planning for this coming year and the year after, as well as, you know, as we try to acquire more properties to build that cash flow.
That's great. So in the next year, you think you'll probably hit your freedom number in this next year?
That's the goal by December 31st of 2017 to have hit that number.
That's great. Well, if you guys are listening out there and you haven't downloaded the cheat sheet yet, we call it the Freedom Number Cheat Sheet. I probably haven't mentioned it in a number of weeks here on the podcast. Shame on me. Just go over to the website. Just go to morrisinvest.com/freedom, and you can download it. It's a free 3-page PDF and kind of sit down and map it out and see what works for you. It's I recommend sort of sitting down with your iPad and your spouse and just kind of mapping out your monthly expenses. It kind of walks you through how to look at your monthly expenses and then map out your overall number of houses you would need to acquire to achieve financial freedom. And it is a game changer when you hit that number. We just had a guest on our show recently from the East Coast, and he was laid off, and now he, as a result, bought these rental properties and ended up hitting financial freedom like in a short amount of time. And now he just travels. He's like, I'm not going back to work. I'm just in travel. So it's a great thing.
Yeah. He's living the dream.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, for those people who are listening about, you know, think about taking action for the first time, or there's something holding them back. You've had quite a bit of experience now over this past year. What would you say to those folks?
Take the plunge. It's well worth it. It's very well worth it. And, it's funny because I see sometimes posts that you have even on Facebook, and I see the negativity that people just spew out there. Mm-hmm. And it's so baffling and they probably don't even know what they're talking about.
Right.
But I see it and I'm like, wow. And these people are probably the ones that are like, you know, I can just keep going to my job and doing the same thing over and over, stuck in the rat race. And here you have thousands of people, hopefully, that have taken the plunge and have enjoyed successes as I have and have achieved. I know I've seen you've had podcasts where people have already achieved their financial freedom.
Right.
So it absolutely works 100%. But you got to factor in some things. Obviously, not everything's going to be rosy all the time. You have to expect that you're going to have the tenant turnover or to get that letter from the Board of Health, and you just deal with it. It's not an emergency. You just expect to deal with it. And it's part of the process.
Right.
And it's the process that is going to be the most rewarding at the end of the day. And that counts.
Right. And keeping your eye on the cash flow. You know, we're not perfect. You know, we would like to think that we hit, you know, every mile marker in a rehab. And sometimes, you know what, we get an ice storm. So we literally, the whole city shut down and we can't get up on the roof. Or, you know, that contractor was supposed to get photos over to the team. Yeah. Well, contractors are focused on swinging hammers and nails and they forget to take photos. Shoot, we're going to have, you know, a delay on getting you photos. It's like, we're not perfect and no one is, but as long as you keep focused on the cash flow, that is at the end of the day, the main focus, you know? And that's why so many people fall in love with that first house that they buy, that they lived in, and then they move out and they think they want to hold on to it. And yet the numbers are totally upside down. I'll talk to them on the phone and they'll say, well, you know, we, my husband and wife, we have this, $400,000 condo that we still own. It was our first place. We moved out. Now we're just kind of upside down on the numbers. You know, the monthly rent is $2,000 and our mortgage is $2,500. But we think in 30 years or 15 years, it'll pay it down and then we'll start to cash flow it. And I asked them, I'm like, why are you being emotional about real estate? Like that to me, you know, it's a business. So just sell the thing. I would literally be calling a realtor, getting it on the open market this afternoon, cut bait on that condo that you bought years ago that doesn't serve you anymore, and start really thinking about cash flow and building passive income.
Right. It's funny. I have a friend, a colleague that has a property that he bought in New Jersey, where, you know, around us. And he's like, this is great. It's negative $200 a month cash flow, but I'm going to have so much appreciation. And I'm like, wow, you are totally missing the point. Totally off.
That's amazing. And, you know, I like to say, and this is a good thing we could bring up here, just you and I, as we wrap this up. You know, a lot of people think that they can have all three in real estate: cash flow, equity, and appreciation. And I'm here to tell you that you can never have all three. It's like when you're doing a rehab, right? You can either do it quickly, cheaply, or with quality, right? So you can't do all three. You can't do it cheap, you can't do it quickly, and you can't have quality. You've got to choose the two of the three that are going to make you the happiest. And the same is true of real estate. So for me, my houses are, number one, I care about cash flow. And if they drop in value because of a recession, I don't care. Because as long as I'm continuing to get cash flow every month, that's my main focus. Now, do I want a little bit of equity? Sure, 5, 10% in my properties. That's, you know, normally our goal. But appreciation, that's like, to me, that's like icing on the cake. Great. Right. There's no chance. I don't really see it. Maybe I see a 2% appreciation, 3% appreciation, fine. But you cannot have all three. How do you feel about that?
I completely agree 100%. So I had a conversation with another, actually a realtor, and you know she's interested in doing this too. And I was like, you never, ever buy for appreciation. Appreciation, I used the exact expression you did. It's icing on the cake. If it happens, great. And you know what? Maybe because we're holding these properties forever, maybe in 10, 15 years, we're going to turn around and say, wow, look at how much my property appreciated. But we're only concerned about the cash flow. You know, hey, every month I'm making money. I'm making, you know, 600, 6,000, hopefully one day, right?
Right.
And the appreciation is just a bonus if that should ever come. But like my friend that I told you that bought the house for negative 200 a month because he's banking on appreciation, he's going to be in for a very rude awakening. But, you know, it's a learning point for him.
Yeah, I mean, if think about 2008 when you could literally buy a property in Florida for $200,000 and then hold it for 30 days and sell it for $220,000, you know, 30 days later. That's exactly what was happening, and that's how people were investing for appreciation. I mean, that is a vehicle to me is incredibly risky and also dead. You know, if you get it, great. But that's not what I'm going after. So. Well, some real pearls of wisdom in here, Dan, and I really appreciate you circling back and wanting to share your story with the audience. I think you know our audience gets a lot of value out of that. And I just want to say I love what you said about the negativity that's out there too, that sometimes if I post something on Facebook or who knows, whatever, just there's always going to be people that are going to say, this sounds like snake oil salesman, or this is snake, you know, or this kind of stuff. And you cannot really talk to those kind of people. You know, right. I can have a little back and forth and say, well, no, actually, it's not snake oil. You know, my whole family's future is built on this, you know, buying real estate and having it cash flow. So, and it's kind of one of the most honest businesses that you can think of. You buy a house, you fix it, you put someone in it to live, and they pay you to live there. I mean, it's as old as dirt, right? I mean, that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. So for there to be any sort of pyramid scheme or all of that kind of fear out there about real estate, it really is, it's unnerving.
Yeah, oh, it is. But I think it's people justifying their lack of taking action. And that's how they do it, by saying, oh, this can't work. Oh, how can you buy a property in Indianapolis or wherever? And, oh, you're a sucker. And I'm like, well, I'm a sucker who's making money every month. So, well, you know, let's see how that goes.
Right. We'll see in 10 years where each of you are.
Yeah.
Someone thinks it's snake oil and you're there providing for your family.
The funny thing to follow up on that, Clayton, is I met someone when I first started with you shortly thereafter who was interested and I guess talked himself out of it because of fear. And he has since followed up with me a couple months ago and I've talked about how my experiences have been and what my monthly cash flow is now looking like. And he's like, oh my God, I'm an idiot for not moving faster. And I was like, well, you know, I kind of agree, but that's okay. I'm not going to say that. And I said, whether or not you did it before, you still can do it now and you can still, you know, write your future now. And hopefully he's going to take that plunge in the next month or two.
That's great. Well, my guest has been Dan Barley. A year later, a year and a half later or so, after taking the plunge in real estate investing, great to hear what you've gone through with health violation letters and tenant turnover and cash flow, and looking forward to hitting your freedom number. Dan, it's been a real treat catching up with you, and I hope that you kick the rest of that flu out of you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I hope you feel better. And if there's anything you ever need or I can do to help, I'm more than happy to do so.
I always love talking with you, Dan. Give my love to the family as well. And thanks to all of you for dialing up and listening to this show. We mentioned a couple episodes in here. I'd love for you to go back and check out episode 60, where we talked about dealing with the health department. You know, it's going to be different in every city, every county across the country, but some have them, some don't. Some are more annoying than others. But just to, you know, just so you understand what goes into those things. And also, don't forget to download the Freedom Cheat Sheet that we talked about. Just go over to morrisinvest.com/freedom, download that cheat sheet, and go back and check out Dan's early episode too if you want. Go back to episode 14. Much love to all of you. Go out there. Take action. As Dan said, get off your butt. Take action. Don't kick yourself later for not doing it. And become a real estate investor. We'll see you next time, everyone.